Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast with your one co-host, Spencer. That's me.
And your other co-host, Joel. See, I did it this time.
I wasn't expecting that. Okay.
No, taking charge.
Yeah. So, this is the follow-up to our episode on Rhapsody in August from the year 1991. A little Studio Ghibli picture known as Only Yesterday. Now, to get into things pretty quickly, this was pretty much unavailable in the U.S. until last year. And yep. So, I guess this is kind of a new release, technically.
Well, I mean it doesn't feel like a new release, even if you watch it now, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's kind of the most recent movie we've done because it wasn't easily available for 25 years.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Well, it's got references to women having their menstrual cycle. Oh no.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, so Disney bought basically the Studio Ghibli library, right?
Yeah, Disney owns a U.S. branch or something.
And they thought it was okay to release Princess Mononoke, but this movie, that's a step too far.
I've never seen Princess. What you said,
Mononoke?
Yeah.
We went and saw it in the theater. They, did a revival of a couple of them recently.
Is that Miyazaki or this guy?
No, it's Miyazaki, yeah.
Okay. So it's, all fantastical and stuff?
It's definitely set. That movie's definitely set in a fantasy world. And it's super violent. It's not like his, more popular movies. It's really good.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
Watch it now.
No, I will when we're done talking about Only Yesterday Isao. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I would assume Isao Takahata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy, he's older than I thought he was. He was born in 32, so he's in his 80s.
Yeah, he's one of the founders of Studio Ghibli with Miyazaki back in the day. So they're been longtime animators, and he did things outside of the company.
He started in the 50s or 60s.
Takahata Isao. Yeah, it says, let's see. Oh, I'm looking at his Wikipedia, and all I'm seeing is Studio Ghibli movies, but I know that there's one that's actually pretty well known called, let's see, on Letterboxd they call it The Little Norse Prince. I think that's the American name. It's got a completely different name in Japan, and that's interesting animation, and it's one of the first movies I think that they released in U.S., in the U.S., in theaters, that was a Japanese animated movie.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong. I could be talking about a completely different movie. You know what? I take back everything I said. It's fine.
Okay. Well, where is it? I'm looking up when he first started. We did Grave of the Fireflies, which we discussed.
Yeah, man.
Which I hear is very good, but also you kind of watch it once, and then that's it.
Well, yeah, because afterwards you kill yourself, so that's not... watched it, and I think it is a spectacularly, emotionally amazing animated movie, but... Hmm. Oh, your soul. Your soul.
Okay, so he started in 63 on a TV series called Okami Shonin Kin.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I'm sure it's pretty much unavailable.
Probably. Well, I don't know. You know, things become more widely available. But, if it was on TV, it might be harder.
True.
To get.
Yeah, so this is the first Studio Ghibli movie I didn't fall asleep watching. The other
really?
Two... Yeah. Well, with the one with the witch with the giant head and eyeshadow.
Yeah, Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah, fell asleep on that one.
But eyeshadow.
Spirited Away. Is that it?
Yes. Oh, you're talking about the gross-looking witch lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spirited Away. Okay.
Yeah, because I remember I saw that out of nowhere on Disney Channel when I was, like, 12 or something. Yeah. I had no clue what it was, and it just really freaked me out. It's during one of the more, like, I guess, fantastical parts, and it was, like, 10 at night. Like, I don't know what's happening. I went to bed confused.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was my introduction to Studio Ghibli. I have a friend who's obsessed with Studio Ghibli who he tries to see every single Ghibli movie.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that is anything to be ashamed of, but I do think a lot of people do tend to do that nowadays.
Well, this was like, I don't know, 10 years ago when I was in high school
when I was high school in the freaking 90s. I knew about Studio Ghibli movies, like imports that people were talking about. I was saying before we were recording that Princess Mononoke is one of my favorite movies, and I think that we had like a copy from somewhere that we were watching, and when me and my sister were still young, we had a VHS copy of My Neighbor Totoro.
Mm-hmm.
With, obviously it was dubbed, it wasn't subtitled, and the funny thing is now when I watch it, it's been redubbed because Disney bought it and redid all the voice with, like, semi-famous actors, and I'm just like,
Christian Bale is in one of them.
Well, he's not in My Neighbor Totoro.
He's in,
It's one of the Fannings is in My Neighbor Totoro.
L? Or the Dakota?
Probably L.
Hmm.
But yeah, like I'll like hear somebody singing the song or hear the dad's voice, and I'll be like, "That's not right." I know what that person's supposed to be doing, and it was a lot funnier when I was a kid.
Yeah, I saw a review for only yesterday, where someone said they bought the Laserdisc import because that was the only way you could watch it. No subtitles, so I guess they knew Japanese.
Must have, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you know, they just watched it for the animation, which is totally something that I used to do also when I was younger. Like, you watch something that isn't translated, and you just enjoy what's going on. But when you said you didn't fall asleep, I find that kind of funny, because...
this one wasn't as comforting as Kiki's Delivery Service or Spirited Away, which I saw, again, few years ago, and I really like them, and I've been meaning to rewatch them at some point. Like, I want to watch the Miyazaki ones.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they're all good. But you should watch the one that makes you cry.
Like this one?
Like this one, apparently.
It didn't make you cry?
No, it didn't. But like I said, I watched it dubbed. You watched it subbed. I think that actually makes quite a difference. And... spoiler for the ending, that part, you know, where we're seeing what's happening during the credits and she decides to go back to the farm. They start playing that song, The Rose, but it's in Japanese. Yeah. And I've got kind of a personal thing with that song, so as soon as I started to hear it, I knew the tune immediately and I started laughing really hard.
Oh, okay.
So that kind of ruined it. It's not the movie's fault. Me and Sarah have talked to the lady who originally wrote that song.
Oh.
And she has performed at the theater where Sarah used to work. So we know her kind of on a personal level. And the old people that go to the theater just, like, love that song. Like, she gets up there to, like, oh, sing it for us. And so I've got kind of this goofy association, you know. I'm not throwing any shade on the song or the actress. It's just like a weird association in my brain.
All right. So, yeah, you know some celebrities.
Oh, yeah, man. Let me tell you. I know Joe Spano. I know the lady who wrote The Rose. Yeah. I'm just coming up in the ages. Let me finish this part before I thought you, if you were going to fall asleep, you'd fall asleep mm-hmm. during that long car ride.
No, like, Keegan's Delivery Service was very delightful and like very comforting. And same with Spirited Away, was very delightful and comforting. And so it was kind of like easing to sleep. Not like I was bored. And this one was kind of, I was just very engrossed in, like, her on a Teiko?
Yeah.
Yeah, Teiko's, like, journey and her story.
Right. It's a lot of dialogue during that one particular scene, and I think I would have, I switched it over to sub.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to see if it was as kind of numb as it was in the dubbed. And no, because the Japanese actor is actually emote. In the dubbed version, we got Daisy Ridley and we've got Dev Patel. For some reason, Daisy Ridley is not using her perfectly fine British accent, but Dev Patel is. So it's like, what the hell happened there?
Wait, Dev Patel's British? I've never seen any of his movies, so I don't know. I thought he was, like, born and raised in India.
Let's see. He was born and raised in London to Indian parents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Don't be racist.
I've never seen Slumdog Millionaire or the other movies he's been in.
It's an okay movie.
I don't know any other movies he's been in.
He just had a movie.
Lion, I guess?
Yeah, Lion. Yeah, it was like up for Academy
Award. Oh, yeah, I hear that's just okay.
Yeah, go see it right now.
Well, I hear the first half is good, and then the Devil with Tell part is kind of blah.
I'm not sure.
That's what the movie podcast told me.
Oh. I'm one of the few people on Earth that likes Chappie, so I got that going for me.
Oh. Yep, sure. After Elysium, I was like, I'm kind of done with... I forgot the guy's name. Kind of done with him.
Yeah, I didn't see Elysium because it was so bad.
It's not bad, just disappointing.
I see. So, only yesterday, you want to talk about the plot?
Do you want... Well, I don't know. We could, like, get real... Not real, like, specific and detailed with, like, each flashback, but... I don't know.
No, just to go through a general thing here. I mean...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so, in a nutshell, we begin with a young career woman in early 1980s Tokyo. The Tokyo? Not relevant. Anyway.
I believe they do say they're in Tokyo.
Yes, it's 1982. And she's 27, unmarried, and so she decides to go to the country for a vacation, because she's never taken a vacation before. And the whole time, we get, during her vacation, we get flashbacks to when she was 10 years old in 1966. And it's not like a straightforward plot, it's more just... how would you explain this?
It's a series of like flashback vignettes in between where this woman is going on her vacation, which is not a typical vacation. She goes out to the farmland where I think her like brother-in-law's family lives.
Yeah, her brother-in-law's family.
And she helps out with her. She's very enthusiastic about being able to help on the farm because she doesn't... It seems like she is happy working with her hands. She's happy working in this style. And the city is, you know, she's okay with her life. Yeah. But it's, you know, they treat it as unusual. She's 27. She's not married. She's lived in Tokyo her whole life. You know, she's kind of an oddball. And, so when we see flashbacks of her as a child, did they say fifth grade for you?
Yeah, fifth grade.
Okay, I didn't know if that was something that translated. Here, hold on, my cat has gone insane. He just jumped straight in the air and then fell slightly forward. Come here. Gratis? All right. And we're basically, yeah, everything that we're flashing back to is when she was 10 in the fifth grade. For some reason, she's thinking a lot about that, and we see the experiences of them, you know, the first time she had a crush on somebody, the yeah. first time somebody explained what the menstrual cycle was and it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And her relationship with her parents and her siblings.
Her like, two older sisters.
Yep.
One's nice and one isn't.
I didn't get the feeling that either of them were very nice, but well, one of them is one, more
one's
present.
Nicer to her.
Yeah, one of them is just more present.
Yeah, and the other one's kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
All right, well, my notes. Fuck off, Yako?
Yako? Wacko and Dog?
I don't know. I forgot how to say it. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Yeah. She's just a really mean sister. Anyway, so.
I mean, I don't think she's any meaner than the normal sister. I don't know what to tell you. I had an older sister.
I had an older sister, too, but she wasn't mean.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you're just special.
I don't know. Well, you had, like, what, 5 siblings?
I have 4, and okay. Only one is younger than me, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were the youngest.
No. Mm. I got replaced.
Oh.
And I'll never get over it. Yeah. So it is just kind of a series of... It's interesting that she keeps flashing back to just this specific age, because it doesn't really tell you what made her into the woman she is today. And she doesn't seem like she's weird or anything like that, other than wanting to take a vacation where she just goes and works on a farm.
She wants to go live the country life because it's right. simpler.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think she thinks it's simpler. She thinks it's a different kind of complicated, the kind that she, like, understands rather than city life.
True.
Because she has that whole thing where she talks about dividing fractions and how yeah. some people get it and she never got it. And, like, people, they thought she was slow because she just couldn't get that stuff. And I think that's, like, kind of a, you know, that's supposed to be a metaphor for what's going on with her. It's like, when I'm here, I feel like, when I'm on this farmland, I feel like I can divide fractions. When I'm not, I feel like I'm constantly struggling or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And that's when her mom says she's not normal, and she happens to hear it, and then the mom's like, oh, fuck. She heard.
Yeah, some crappy stuff happens to her as a kid, and it's she's not bitter about it or anything like that.
She seems to be over it, or at least
she finds it almost amusing at this point. And I think that is a pretty good reflection of the way life is. Like, we have memories of things that happen to us as kids, where we might explain it to somebody, and they might be like, your dad smacked you, you know? Like, it's like, yeah, he smacked me. But, you know, and in one way, that's kind of defending a person. But in another way, it's like, well, I am who I am. And I accept that this thing kind of happened to me. And it's not defining my life. What did you think of the father in this?
You don't get much of him as a person for a good while. He's very stern and quiet and is reading his newspaper. And we'll say, like, a very short sentence. And then people, you know, and then the scene kind of totally changes.
Yeah.
He is very... He feels like a father in an Ozu movie. Very traditional. But a little gruffer than, like, Ozu would make a father character.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He is, like, almost kind of like a stereotype of, like, the stern, unavailable father. You know, it's like Kevin's father on The Wonder Years. I don't know if you ever watched that.
I did as a kid. I didn't understand it, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Just kind of a gruff jerk sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Like, I feel like he was, like, she has these memories of him being specifically nice to her, I guess, because she was the baby of the family or whatever you call her, like, little bear, I think.
Yeah. There's a big age gap. Well, it seems like the age gap between her sisters and her.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's weird that he was just, like, so gruff with the rest of the family all the time. Like, we only saw him kind of be nice to her when he was, like, when she didn't know if she wanted to go to dinner because she was, like, dealing with her feelings and stuff like that. And he like, came in after everyone had already decided to leave and was like, "You're not coming?" You know, it's like, oh, Dad does care. Yeah. Except for it's followed up by the scene. How did they present that in Japanese?
What do you mean?
Well, when she rushes out and she's like, "I'm coming." Like, is he mad at her because of her shoes?
Yeah. It seems like it was the same in your version. Like, she's, you know, she runs out without her shoes on, and he slaps her.
Right. It just, that seems really weird to me. I mean, I guess that's a piece of, like, the culture that I haven't picked up on yet. Because I know that everyone takes their shoes off when they enter, you know, a room. You know, there's a place for their shoes. But I never realized that you're not supposed to go outside without your shoes on.
Hmm.
I guess I've never really seen anyone walking around barefoot, you know, except for maybe, like, poor people in, like, Seven Samurai, but...
Hmm, yeah. Yeah, I never thought that much into it, because, like, once he slaps her, you know, you kind of, you know, you focus on that.
Right.
And, you know, and she says, he only slapped me once, and I still constantly think about it, and then the little girl she's talking to, which I guess is her brother-in-law's niece or something. It's explained who she is exactly.
Yeah, I figured it was like his little sister, like her brother-in-law's little sister that still live with the family or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and she says her dad smacks her all the time, and she seems very unaffected by it.
In the English dubbed version, she says, "Yeah, he smacks me, but not nearly as hard as what you just described." And then Taiko is like, "I think that's a good thing." Like, what? I think everyone needs a good smacking or two. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fifth grade stuff was really real.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
I enjoyed it too, but it was also kind of like, yeah, I remember being like her in certain some ways.
Maybe it's the amount of distance I have. You know, I can kind of remember some of that stuff, but I can't really clue in on it. So I, you know, you're younger. You're like a decade younger than me. So
yeah.
So maybe you're just a little bit closer to it than I found that fifth grade stuff way more interesting than any of the adult stuff.
Yeah, I did too. Just some of it was kind of like, it's a little too real for me.
Yeah,
I remember being super embarrassed and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, right, red face.
Yeah, and like, you know, there's the, I think the first one is when she learns these girls from another class come in, and they're all like walking in step. And
it's that's like, pretty great.
And it's like a military drill, and they're like, "Which one of you is Taiko?"
Yep.
And then they,
it's like the police.
Yeah, they announced that a boy, Haruda?
Yeah, from their class.
Yeah, likes her. And then that sets off this whole investigation with her friends of, well, does he really like her? And they, like, it's like a detective movie for that vignette.
Yeah. And the baseball scene, you know, where she's like, oh my gosh, she's great at baseball. I gotta get the hell out of here. It's pretty funny. And it's cute, you know? Kids being funny or cute.
Yeah.
I really like the way that they handled the whole talking about menstruation thing, and mm-hmm. that she had the friend that was just kind of laughing it off when people were making fun of them. Because it seemed, I mean, that seemed way positive. It's like, yeah. I mean, it happens. And those people are gross for, like, thinking about it. You know, the boys are gross. So what are you going to do? They're dumb.
Yeah. And they... Okay, when you were in, like, fifth grade, were boys trying to look up girls' skirts, like, that much?
Yes.
Oh. I'm at the Catholic school, and, like, that didn't really happen like that. Like, we were stricter about it. Or maybe because it is less people at our school, so maybe that kind of added to, like, nah, don't do that, because it's a very, you know, we've been, like, the class I went through with, it's, like, the same people for, like, second grade to eighth grade. So it's kind of like, you know, we could grow up together, literally, and stuff.
I don't know. No, I understand. So, no, like, I never had, like, the same people in classes when I was growing up. You know, there were, like, 400 students at a time at the elementary school I went to. You know, so we were swapping out teachers and all that other stuff.
Yeah. So, like, the boys being weird pervs that happened at your school?
I feel like, although I don't have a specific memory, I feel like, yes. I feel like, and it wasn't about being, like, you know, a-holes like there were. It was, like, about a curiosity thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know? In this movie, it's presented as a, like, girls, you're gonna get your period, you know, like, whatever that means. Hmm. And I feel like more often it's like, that's a girl, I'm a boy, what is this all about? I don't understand, you know, because you're at that age.
Yeah. Oh, okay, we have to talk about the pineapple.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is jumping ahead. I didn't expect pineapples to show up again.
91 was a big year for pineapples, what can you say?
Apparently, pineapples are not grown in Japan, because they make a big deal out, oh, did you get me a pineapple from America or something?
That's a little weird.
Yeah, and the family's like, I think the mom's like, I don't know how to cut a pineapple.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of the sisters comes home from school and she screamed like, I know how to cut up a pineapple. And they get the whole family together to eat pineapple.
Yep. And then it's not super sweet like they used to, because they're used to only eating it out of a can.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's got like syrup and added sugar. It's pretty funny.
But Teiko, I don't want to say it's... it's like a religious experience for her eating the pineapple. Like, she takes it very seriously.
Well, you know, she's acting like a stubborn fifth grader, a stubborn 10-year-old. Like, I was excited about this pineapple. I'm not going to let anyone ruin it. You know, you're not going to eat it. I'm going to eat it.
Yeah. But she seemed genuinely offended when her sister said they didn't like it.
Yeah, her sisters are genuinely offensive. So,
yeah,
you know.
Especially Yeiko, she's just the worst.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
What can I say? How much of an age difference is it between you and your older sister?
3.5 years.
Okay. It's not too bad. You guys would have, like, been in high school at the same time, huh?
Yes, for 1 year.
Yeah. My older siblings are much older than me.
Oh. My parents... pick that age gap because in parenting books my mom read, 3 to 4 years is the ideal age gap between kids, at least according to parenting books in the late 80s, early 90s.
Man, you're one of them planned children.
Yeah, they were very strategic about it.
I'm not sure if I was, but I know for a fact that my younger sister was not. And she is 7 years younger than me, so that's quite a gap.
Yep.
Yeah. What else about this? Like,
Featuring an age gap, my dad's youngest sibling was born when his older sibling was 18.
Yeah.
And she had her first kid when my dad's youngest brother was one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I grew up thinking, like, oh, yeah, everyone has, like, a cousin who's the same age as an uncle. That's normal. And then
I learned,
oh, no, that's not normal. My family has a lot of people in it.
Yeah. I know a couple people that have siblings that are, like, you know, older than them.
Mm.
My niece is 19, and her youngest sibling is one, so.
Hmm.
Yeah. It happens still to this day. In my family, at least, it's going to happen. Yeah.
Let's see.
So I thought that the opening was kind of weird with the... I was initially confused when we saw the older person, you know, getting her vacation days off. And then we, at least in my version, it just kind of like switches over to the fifth grader. And mm-hmm. I thought it was like the mom getting the days off and they were going to take a vacation. And then mom was like, we can't afford a vacation. I was like, wait, you just got those 10 days off. are you tricking your daughter? And then, you know, it turns out later that, yeah, it's like a flashback, but it was confusing. Like, I'm going to the spa with grandma and get bored out of my mind.
Yeah, well, she wanted to go see Roman Baths.
Who doesn't?
And she's real excited about seeing, I guess Roman Baths are a thing in Japan.
Those Romans went everywhere. What can you do?
I have a friend who's married to a Japanese woman, and I guess I could ask them if that's a thing in Japan. Or not.
No. Never talk to them. No, just
kidding. All right.
What did they refer to the farming as in your version? The one that Toshio was all about.
Or is it, you mean like this festival thing with the flowers that used for rouge
thing? No, he kept talking about the special farming he was doing.
I don't remember. I tried a new technique in taking notes this time.
Yeah.
So I didn't write down as nearly as many notes as I did. So I don't remember.
I see. Well, in the dub version, he kept referring it to as organic farming, which I'm like, in 1991.
Well, set in 82.
Oh, even worse.
Well, yeah, he did say organic farming, and did kept saying, like, well, it's not really organic. We still use pesticides.
Oh, I see. Yeah, he didn't say that there.
Oh, yeah, he said that in this version. And she and Taiko was like, oh. And she didn't seem to care.
Nope, it was just a lot of exposition. According to the Internet Movie Database in the trivia section, the manga that this was based on was only a series of vignettes about the kid. And the guy who made this made up all the adult stuff.
Hmm.
Just for so he could make an actual movie around it.
Interesting.
I think he did a real good job, except for some of the slower bits, but I think everything else I enjoyed.
It's a very good movie, very well made.
Yeah.
Like, the flashbacks were done in... Not done in... the edges of the... Of, like, the cell that you'd see was, like, always, like, fading into white.
Yeah.
From inside out, fading into white, which is a really good way of showing, like, you know, it's the past, it's gone, it's, you know, time fading away.
It's like every episode of Caillou. Have you ever seen that show?
My nieces used to love it, and now they've grown out of it, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
The theme song stuck in my head.
Oh, man, I can't think of it right now, so let's just keep it that way.
It's terrible.
Some say love is like a... Anyway, what was I going to say? I was going to say... The only thing I didn't like about the animation was the adults' faces.
With the cheekbones?
Like, yeah, the cheekbone. Like, they didn't... For some reason, when he was drawing the family as younger, they seemed to have different levels of expressions. But for the adults, when he was just doing that part, they, like, were either, you know, regular, you know, just like a listening face or a super happy face or, like, a whatever face. There's this part where Grandma is, like, grabbing the equipment when it starts raining so it doesn't get wet. And she's like, her face doesn't move. She's like running in the rain, and it's like kind of weird, weird looking animation thing. And the funny thing is, I don't know what I expect, but I do think that maybe he had more things going on in the flashback scenes because he had the manga to reference.
Yeah, the adult part seemed less. There's a less to the her as a grown up.
Yeah. It's like more... I mean, maybe that was on purpose. Maybe her flashbacks were supposed to seem
more
animated, like, because of the way she remembers them.
True. That could be it. And also, that just show it, like, as an adult, things are more real and more, I guess, drab.
And not, ugly.
Yeah, not fantastical as like when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Because like during the flashbacks, you'd get these like quick like flashes where like she would be floating in the sky, or like the one where she gets the purse she wanted and she like poses and it's like changes the background for like a few seconds.
Yeah. I mean, that's what actually happens.
No.
Don't joke around.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
La La Land is a magical place.
No, no. It is not. It's La La Land Day.
Still haven't seen it. I'm sure it's fine.
I think you'd like it.
No.
I'm just kidding. I didn't like it. I don't know if you will.
No.
What do you think, in comparison, this movie to... Rhapsody in August.
I like that. Well, it's not fully true, but they're both very focused on a single particular family in like the multi generations. Where like they both dealt with like the grandchildren, the children and the grandparents. Well, you know what I mean? The children.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's family oriented.
Yeah, they're both very, I don't know, they were both pretty serious in very different ways. Like,
yeah, I think that they had kind of almost the same level of seriousness, because there were certainly silly parts in Rhapsody in August, and this one had silly parts, but it was also, you know, I think it was a good reflection of, like, life.
Yeah. Well, this was a period piece set, 10 years before Rhapsody in August.
Right. And I wonder why. I guess the only reason he would have done that is because he didn't want the character to be too old. Because if the manga took place like in 66, when
the flashbacks are supposed Beatles to take, it's very much the 60s, the Beatles and like mini skirts are a thing in Japan. I guess that was a 60s thing.
Right. Know. Yep.
The way they dress is very 60s. At least.
Still dress that way. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
It didn't seem to... You know, the 82 to 91 gap didn't seem that different.
Nah.
I'm sure the computers are better.
I don't know, it seemed different to me. Like I feel like you saw more like jeans and stuff in the 80s section.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we didn't get a clear look at what, like, modern people look like. Like, we spent all that time out on the farm, and I think they specifically dressed them more like people who lived in the country.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. I realize that that's Rhapsody in August takes place out there, but...
Yeah.
Like, those kids, I think, lived in the city normally. That's why they were dressed that way.
Yeah, true, because in Rhapsody, they were visiting Grandma.
Yeah.
From... wherever city they're from.
And when you told me that you teared up at the end, I was like, what, are they going to show Grandma dying? Don't do that.
No, the romance part in the credits.
Right. No,
it was great.
Yeah, it is touching.
Yeah, well, we didn't get to that part, but I guess, is it her brother-in-law's mom?
Yeah, I think it is her brother-in-law's grandmother and her brother-in-law's mom. That is her brother-in-law's grandmother that's like, you should stay here and marry Toshio.
Yeah, because, like, she's hanging out with this young farmer, Toshio, who is, I guess, her brother-in-law's cousin? I kind of forgot
said it's his second cousin.
Second cousin, yeah. And, you know, they're very similar. They both aren't, like, city folk.
Yeah.
And, you know, they start hanging out, and it's a very... felt very natural. It wasn't like a melodramatic romance or whatever. It felt very like these two people, you know, they hang out and they realize, no, they like to be around each other a lot.
Yeah. Like, I enjoy hanging out. It's not necessarily a romance thing, which I think is more normal over there.
Maybe.
You know, I don't want to make any assumptions. I have no idea.
I can ask my friend Chris and his wife.
No, they're laughing at the freaking Holocaust or whatever they were doing.
Well, she was, to make him laugh.
She's wearing a Hitler shirt and being like, this is my hero, running around. I know what's going on.
Don't say that.
I know what's going on.
Moe is a lovely person.
I'm sure. I think I liked Rhapsody in August better, but not by much. It's not really a fair comparison either, even though they're both about family and like growing up.
And pineapples.
Stuff like that. And pineapples. But, you know, it's that Richard Gere star effect. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, Richard Gere speaking Japanese did it for you?
Yeah, that's what sent me over the top. I was thinking about when we were talking about that movie, and you said that people were like bringing up how they didn't even talk about Japan, like, invading China during the war and stuff
and
like that.
And the war crimes and blah, blah,
and
blah.
How pissed off I was.
Yeah.
I was like, what I was thinking was, like, did people have the same reaction when they saw Grave of the Fireflies? Like, you're showing how bad it was for these two kids, but what about the China? You're like, screw you. That's not what the movie's about. Buttholes. There are movies about that stuff.
I feel like with Grave of Fireflies, they're too busy crying. Because it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. I don't know if I want to or not.
I mean, you shouldn't unless it's like on a list where you're trying to check everything off.
I'm kind of doing that right now.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's really good, very powerful.
Yeah, well, next up, well, this is off topic, but next up on my list is Unbreakable, the Philly guy. M. Night movie.
The Philly guy?
He's from Philly.
The Philadelphia man?
You didn't grow up near Philly. Like, he's a big deal around here. A lot of people love him.
So we're watching the Unbreakable for the podcast.
I'm watching it for myself. Because allegedly he used to make good movies. I'm not convinced, though.
Well, you gotta watch it now. Because Unbreakable and Split are, like, gonna be combined into a sequel.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, so I was like, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. So, I'm looking at the other movies that came out in 1991. We have to do that, don't we? I forgot about that part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so, any final thoughts on Takahata's, you know, lost masterpiece?
I think it's very good, and I think that it would be a good... it's not like... I feel like a little kid would be bored with this movie, but somebody who's
definitely.
around the age of that character, you know, 10, 11, 12, I think that it's a perfectly good movie to show.
Oh, yeah. Forgot to mention, this only yesterday was the highest grossing movie in Japan in 1991.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a huge hit with adults.
But obviously. Rhapsody in August came out the same year.
Well, people in Cannes hated it because, you know, Japan invaded China, but Kurosawa didn't talk about it.
Yeah, they didn't talk about it in this movie either. What the hell? I wanted to see a movie with a pineapple. Yeah. Not a movie about dropping the bomb.
Yeah, but seriously, what's up with pineapples? There's this, like, of the things that be similar, do not expect pineapples to show up.
I'm not sure.
When it happened, I paused and told my girlfriend, I can't fucking believe pineapple showed up again. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge deal.
Yeah, I don't think it's been in any of the other stuff we've watched.
No.
But this is the most modern ones we have watched.
True. I don't know, are pineapples a delicacy over there? Like, I don't know, what's up with pineapples? In the early 1991.
Okay, this is my guess, at least for the 1982 version.
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, the 1966 version. They didn't have access to fresh fruit, so mm-hmm. it would have been a big deal. That makes okay. sense to me. Like, you know, any kind of import of fresh fruit from anywhere
okay.
probably was a huge deal, you know, but when it comes up in 1991, it is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I think it, because even back then it was still like we've got money, you know, I can get a pineapple, but these poor people can't, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know this. Listeners in Japan, I know there's a couple of you. Can you explain to me the pineapple stuff, or any listeners that know a lot about Japan pineapples? Just, you know, inform us. I'm really curious about why pineapples were such a big plot point in both these movies. Not a huge plot point, but, you know, they showed up. They were the central theme of a couple scenes in both movies. Yeah. Other 1991 movies?
You go first. I gotta pick for my list. I gotta pick a special one.
Okay. I'm gonna do three. I'm gonna make it quick. Well, we'll take turns. Blah, blah. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
A little movie called Thelma and Louise. It's Ridley Scott's best movie. It's one of the few movies I think is better than Alien, which I think is a perfect horror movie, but I love Thelma and Louise a little bit more. If you haven't seen it, watch it. If you're listening to this, you probably know what it's about, but really is worth watching. Ridley Scott has yet to make a movie better than that. Any thoughts on Thelma and Louise?
No, I've never seen that movie, and Blade Runner is much better than anything else he's made, so that's I'm just putting that out there. If you've only seen the other, you know, the movie cut, that's your problem. Ultimate cut are great.
I don't know. I saw some cut of it a few years ago, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
It's better than Alien.
No, Alien's a perfect movie.
Alien's fine.
It's better than Aliens, which I have problems with.
I'm just kidding. I've only seen Alien once. It was a long time ago, so I don't remember. But Blade Runner is one of my personal favorites.
Yeah. I hear some people really love it.
Yeah. Me? Jeez.
I love the last, like, half hour when it's terrifying, when Roy Batty is trying to kill Deckard. And he bursts his head through the wall.
All that world building is so good. Like,
I got a little bored at parts, and then James Hong showed up. Like, hey, it's James Hong, and then oh, he's gone.
See, it's your favorite. He made your eyes.
Yeah, and then you know, Roy Batty's terrifying, and he bursts his head through the wall, which is a great scene. Anyway,
what about that guy with the dolls? The living dolls. That's freaky.
That was kind of creepy. And there's the Harley Quinn prototype in it too.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure it's Harley Quinn's prototype.
Absolutely. But yeah, Thelma and Louise I've never seen.
Yeah, it's really great. You get some good Christopher McDonald before he did Adam Sandler movies.
I don't think of Christopher McDonald as an Adam Sandler actor. I've seen him in a whole bunch of other stuff.
I'm only known from really terrible comedies from the 90s. And seeing him in like a good movie is like, oh, he can really act.
Yeah. So my first one is Delicatessen. That's directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who also did Amelie and Alien Resurrection, I believe.
Okay.
Or was it Alien 3? He did one of the... Alien Resurrection.
Alien 3 is David Fincher.
Oh, yeah.
That was his debut film.
Alien Resurrection, which I haven't... I've only seen Amelie and Delicatessen. But Delicatessen is this... it's kind of Eraserhead-esque. It's very, like, dark. They're living in a post-apocalyptic landscape where everyone is living in this kind of creaky Barton Fink-esque hotel. And just, like... the neighbors talking with each other, the butcher downstairs starts serving human flesh, you know? And that's, you know, it kind of like it's quirky like Amelie is, but it's way darker. Kind of, I'm going to compare it to another thing, Tim Burton-esque. That's three. Barton Fink, Tim Burton, and Eraserhead. But if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's pretty good.
It's been on my list of something I should watch. Before I had Netflix, it was on my Amazon list to buy because I had no other access to it.
Yeah.
It's been something I've been meaning to watch for a while.
Well, you have no excuse now.
Yeah, I have Netflix, though. I don't have to buy the DVD and potentially not... Never mind.
That is correct. Yeah.
All right, my next one was... Oh, Point Break.
Point Break?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. What is it about?
You get Keanu Reeves playing an FBI agent, and you get some really great Gary Busey as his handler, and you get Patrick Swayze and a gang of surfers who rob banks wearing president masks. One's like a Nixon, one's a JFK. It's a wonderfully stupid action movie.
All right. Hey, I gotta stop you here.
It's good.
Those people you named. Where's Anthony Kiedis?
He's in that.
Yeah, lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I don't remember him in that at all.
He's one of the a-holes that like they think are robbing Flea was the in beach. It. No, Anthony Kiedis, not Flea.
No.
He's like got a terrible haircut. I can't remember specifically, but he's like he's one of the a-holes that's like rolling around on the truck, and then they do that sting operation.
That just went past me. Like I didn't realize that was him.
I know you're not supposed to. It's not important. It just adds to the whole. The great thing about Point Break is it has a gravitas that it doesn't deserve, and is like it doesn't matter because it's great.
Yeah, it's just this great early 90s dumb action movie, and it totally holds up.
Like, so dumb, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's just real enjoyable. And you get Lori Petty, who I'm a big fan of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's in Tank Girl. She's the only reason I watch, too. But I like Tank Girl, too, maybe because of Lori Petty. Yeah, as a kangaroo man.
Yes.
Who is supposed to have a penis, but they cut that out.
Literally.
No, they made up a prop kangaroo penis, but they're like, nah, let's not do this in the movie.
And then they cut it out.
Yep.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, Point Break. It's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Not the remake. The original one.
Yes. There is no remake. Only Zool. The second movie I'm going to mention is Slacker by Richard Linklater.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this is the movie that kind of launched him into a stratosphere of like, oh, directors we got to watch. And
that was first movie, or did he do something before that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I should look that stuff up there. It was probably his first movie. Like, oh, his first movie's what? No, it says here that he directed. No, wait, okay, I'm looking at the wrong order.
This is not the comedy from 2002 with Laura Prepon?
No, what?
There's a never mind. There's a really bad 2000s comedy called Slacker.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah,
no,
it's a Comedy Central favorite. I've seen it like 20 times.
It looks like he had one full-length movie that I've never heard of called It's Impossible to Learn to Plow by Reading Books, and a short film before that. So this was basically is like the one that got it. But it's a series of vignettes of just like people in Slacker, like non-actors, which I totally dig. And it's just pretty, it's just goofy. And like you can't look away. It's that sounds kind of like bad, like you, like a car accident, but I just mean like you just kind of get involved with these characters, you know, going throughout there. And I feel this movie in particular has been ripped off or was ripped off a million times in the 90s. Like I'm going to be a Richard Linklater. I'm going to make a movie just like this. And, you know, bunch of crap came out of it. I'm sure that Clerks was partially inspired by it. Yeah. But
Clerks is actually kind of good.
Yeah, that's one of the successful cases. Mm. But I'm sure, just like when Tarantino, you know, did his stuff, I'm sure there were just a whole crap load of people trying to
grab. It's called the Boondock Saints.
Let's never speak of that movie again. Anyway, Slacker, if you haven't watched it, it's on the Criterion Collection. It might even be on a Filmstruck. I haven't checked, but it's really good.
For the record, I think Boondock Saints is a terrible movie. I'm using that as an example of a bad indie ripoff of Tarantino. My third movie is my favorite Coen brothers, Barton Fink. I'm not sure how to explain it. It's really beyond... A playwright from New York gets the job of writing a wrestling picture.
I mean, it's just like Delicatessen. I already said that. No, I'm just
he gets...
That's interesting they came out the same year.
Yeah. Barton Fink, So Barton Fink played by John Turturro, nominated for an Oscar. Didn't win, but Barton Fink is a playwright. He gets the job writing a wrestling picture. He knows nothing about it, and he has writer's block, and this kind of meets a bunch of kooky characters like John Goodman and Chet, played by Steve Buscemi, and he meets the Southern author guy. I forgot who it's based off of.
I can't remember either.
Yeah, it's someone from like the 1930s, but I forgot who it is. Anyway, so there's like a, you know, like Coen Brothers stuff, they base characters off real people. Anyway, so, and, you know, stuff happens. He has writer's block. He's trying to write a movie. And you get, you know, John Polito's in it, of course, because it's a Coen Brothers movie from the 90s. He has to be in it. So, yeah, it's really good. And it's this kind of weird mix of comedy and drama and horror. And if you think it's one of the three, there's like you're right and you're wrong at the same time. It's not for everyone, but it is good.
Like that, when I was growing up, John Goodman was on Roseanne, so I only knew him from Roseanne, and I always heard people talking about how good he was, like later in my life, and for a long time was like, he's the guy from Roseanne. He's the guy from King Ralph. Seriously? You guys like this guy? And then you see him in something like Barton Fink, and you're like, holy crap, this guy is an actor.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much, but he's the best part of the movie, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of their Hollywood commentary movies, which is all, those are pretty good. And it's one that, like, rewards rewatches because there's all kinds of stuff, like, hidden. Like, if it was a book, I'd say in the margins, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
A lot of symbolism, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it's, again, not for everyone. I've showed some people this movie, and they were like, and they told me, I don't understand what you see in this.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Don't watch it again.
Like, yeah, that makes sense because it's, yeah. If you go watch on Big Lebowski, that's the one that's easy to to access, or raised in Arizona.
Yep. So there's a whole bunch of things I could be talking about here.
91.
Silence of the Lambs is one of my personal favorites.
Oh, yeah. Jonathan like Demme, rest in peace.
Yeah, in my top five. Terminator 2 is great, of course. Disney Beauty and the Beast. Hook, which is a weird Steven Spielberg movie, I gotta admit.
I apparently saw that as a kid, but I have no memory of it.
I've seen it many, many times because we had it on VHS.
Yeah. I saw it because Adam's my family. Dad... Oh, I saw a lot because my dad loves Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah.
But I have, again, no memory of it. But I did see it as a kid a few times. I know that.
He's pretty good at it. You know, he takes the material and does what he can. Adam's Family, which started a goth revolution among children, I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
I thought Tim Burton started it.
You're probably right.
Beetlejuice.
But Adam's Family was more acceptable because it was, you know, PG or whatever.
Well, Beetlejuice was PG.
Freaking loved it. No, what?
Beetlejuice was PG.
It was probably PG because it was before rated, but it has all kinds of cursing and sexual references.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's a classic.
No, wait. Beetlejuice is R. The Rocketeer, which I don't remember. But anyways, the one I'm going to talk about is a little movie called The Guyver. Do you know the movie The Guyver, Spencer? Uh-huh.
It's a Brian Usna movie, so I'm not going to watch it because it's going to make me throw up.
I don't know what that means. What's a Brian Usna?
He makes... he did, like, Reanimator effects stuff. He makes movies that are really gory and goo and oozy and wet and gross, and I hate it.
That's interesting. There's only one part in this that is really kind of like, ew, that's disgusting. But, yeah, it's a really stupid, stupid movie. The reason I'm bringing it up is because we covered it for the podcast. One of our listeners, not this podcast, for Please Don't Send Me in Outer Space, one of the listeners actually bought us a DVD so we could watch it. And Aaron, of course, my co-host on that show, freaking loved it. He watched it before because apparently it was played all the time on the Sci-Fi Channel. And it has Mark Hamill in it. And I believe me and Sarah had more of a mixed reaction. Whatever, the Guyver is about a guy who finds a suit that turns him into a real cool kung fu nerd, and it's like Power Rangers if Power Rangers was disgusting and idiotic, which I guess it kind of is idiotic at least. But it's, man, I can't recommend watching that movie, but hey, Please Don't Send Me Outer Space episode is pretty good.
Yeah, 91 had a whole lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm, from what I hear.
Oh, and Bill and Ted. I know you love those movies.
Well, I like the first one.
Oh, thought you.
I mean, I love the first one. The other one, I could take or leave.
Oh, interesting.
Jungle Fever.
It's just an okay Spike Lee movie.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I still think it's good. It's just you've not, seen it, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's all right. It's kind of messy, like most Spike Lee stuff, but yeah. It's still good.
Yeah.
You get some really great Samuel Jackson playing a crack addict named Gator. And his girlfriend is played by a young Halle Berry.
Makes sense.
I think it's her first movie role, or one of her first ones. She's really good in it. And you get some good...
Denzel was off doing Mississippi Masala.
Denzel's been in, I think, 2 Spike Lee movies, that's it.
Oh.
Possibly 3.
That's racist.
Well, he's a busy man. And, I know. And Spike has, Wesley Snipes and Sam Jackson and, John Turturro. He's a staple of people. He's doing fine.
Famous African-American actor John Turturro.
It's Spike Lee. He makes movies in New York. John Turturro's always in Brooklyn. Come on.
I know. He is New York.
Yeah.
He went up to Spike Lee and was like, "You stole my story."
So the next pairing episodes will be from 1975. It's Dersu Uzala, which is Kurosawa's it was co-produced by the Soviet Union or something like that. And it's apparently a biography. I don't know much about it. I don't know it's it Well, I know it is not on Criterion, so it's not hard to find, but you can still find it. But it's kind of one of the forgotten ones. And another movie from 1975 will be Sundance Number 8. It is on Criterion. It's on Filmstruck. It's a very depressing but beautiful movie. I've seen it about 4 or 5 times.
Wait a minute. This says Sundance Number 8 was 1974. You're breaking the rules.
Well, I am. I've seen 78, 70, 70, 75, 74. So it counts in my mind. But it's
really, our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
It's a beautiful movie. And by Kumi? Something like that. And he made a bunch of really interesting, good movies.
My question is, does it have any pineapple in it? We'll find out.
It has a whole bunch of cats. They're really cute. And it's also very female-focused, so I want to have more, you know, more female-focused movies. But
lady movies.
Yeah.
Cool.
Alright, plugs.
As I mentioned before, I do a podcast called Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space. Every Monday, me and my co-hosts Sarah and Aaron talk about a different science fiction or fantasy movie. This week, we are going to release an episode on The Seventh Seal. That'll obviously be before this particular High and Low episode comes out. But for some reason, our more high-class movies, more film with a capital F movies, seem to get more downloads. And I assume Stalker. It's film students that don't actually want to watch it. Yeah, Stalker is the most downloaded episode. So, yeah. Explain that to me, because it's not like we explain the movie. I don't know how it works. But yeah, every Monday, you get that iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all the regular places. Check us out.
Alright. Cinema Knife Fight, a deal. Old TV, horror, science fiction. When this comes out, it'll be June. It'll be June. So the review for that month is Twilight Zone. Jess Bell. It's a stupid episode where a girl becomes a witch because the man she loves marries another woman, and she turns into a leopard at night when the moon's up for some reason. It's never explained why, but it's a stupid episode that I really love. And
it's a tale as old as time.
Yes, it is. And I'm also set in the South, so it's like a bunch of Southern accents and hoedowns and fiddle, and there's a leopard. And and for July, it's going to be a show called Space 1999. It's a British BBC science fiction show. That's kind of like their take on Star Trek, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard of Space 1999.
I think that's what it was. I forgot what it was called. Anyway. Yeah, so that's it.
Sounds good. Until then, # I don't know.
Hootie Tootie Disco Cutie.
No.
Feed a Zane, Thug Life.
# Pineapple.
Pineapple Party, Pumas.
Whoa. I'm hanging up. Bye.
Bye. You can email our show at highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. Please rate and review wherever you listen to or find our podcast. Art, the logo is by Aaron Cornelia, and the theme song is by David DeRoy. Thank you for listening. Uptown was outpost, son. Heard he was kingpin, yo. Fuck rappers real, watch the herbs stand still. Never talking to snakes, cause the words a man kill. True in the game, as long as blood is blue in my vein. I pull my Heineken brew to my deceased crew in memory lane.